This is KUPR 99.9, low power FM, serving Placidas, New Mexico, and nearby communities and pueblos, and streaming live on KUPR.org. So this is Anna Rudolph with Chasing the Muse, and my guest today is a local musician, singer, songwriter, band member, and visual artist in Creative Whirlwind. Her name is Terry Winchell. So Terry, welcome to the program. I'm so glad you're here. I've known you for a while. We've been friends. I've always loved your music, and I'm just thrilled that you're going to be on the program today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, I wanted to start this off before we go in depth about your career, which has been long-standing and amazing. I wanted people to hear one of your songs so that they can have a feel for who I'm talking to, who you are, and what your music is like. So I'm going to play your first song. Do you want to introduce it or anything?
Sure. This is a song from my Vice Versa CD, and it's called When the Sun Goes Down. And it's a very scaled down recording. It's just myself on acoustic guitar and singing. And Mark McCarron, the guitar player, is playing along with me on another acoustic guitar.
Okay, sounds great. So this is When the Sun Goes Down from her Vice Versa CD.
When the sun goes down and the desert starts to cool, in your arms, near your heart, is where I want to be. When I found became a shooting star in the same night sky that sparkles in your eyes. Love is life. Can see it when it touches, when it's strong within, it's the only thing that you feel. In your arms.
So, Terry, that is such a beautiful song. I love your songwriting, and the sound of your voice is really amazing. And we will play some more of your songs later so people can become more familiar with them. But I kind of want to start with understanding more of who you are and how you knew you were musical and when all that started. I'm really interested in the background of songwriters and how they became songwriters. So going back, I'm assuming to your childhood, when did you first recognize that you were musical, and in what way was that shown to you?
I think I have moments in my childhood of just knowing that I had, you know, I was drawn to the music. There was a lot of music in my house. My mother was musical, played the accordion. My father was a musician. My brothers all played instruments. So there's a lot of music going on in the house. My uncle was a professional musician. And I think about this, and I think that I didn't really feel there was an exact moment. I think it was kind of osmosis. It's just I knew that music was going to be a big part of my life. I didn't know exactly where it was going when I was 6 years old, but that's when I recognized it. There is a moment that I had. My uncle was playing his clarinet in the sun porch, and he was a wonderful musician. He played sax and clarinet, and he was playing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And I grew up, you know, with The Wizard of Oz, and I heard that song a lot, and I really loved that song. And he asked me if I wanted to sing the song while he played the clarinet. So we're in the sunroom. It was like a room that kind of stuck out on the side of the house, and the sun was pouring through, and he was playing this beautiful instrument. And I sang, and I had an amazing connection with him, and he loved it, and I loved it. And I think that was the light coming in, the light going off, that I thought, wow, this is a good thing. I like doing this. So if there's many moments, but that was one.
Yeah, that's a beautiful story. I love it because I had an uncle who played the sax too, but I never sang with him because I don't have your voice. But sounds like,
well, so, I was a little kid.
Yeah,
who knows what I sounded like.
But still, you came from a big musical family.
Yeah,
and then you had this sort of moment with your uncle while he was playing. And then, did you sing in other groups? Did you, like, join musical groups, choirs, or
well,
at school or anything?
My brother Leo Winchell, also an amazing multi-instrumentalist, I watched him a lot. And he was a real natural at learning instruments and playing music. And it was a focus. And I kind of followed him around, and I was very influenced by the things that he was interested in. In our family, I was the youngest of six, and he was right next to me. He was 3 years older. So, you know, I'm talking like, you know, 6, 7 years old at the time I was. In the beginning, I was doing mostly solo music. I was, you know, I had a lot of very strong types, individualistic type of siblings growing up. And so I made my own path in what I chose to do with my life. And I was playing out in bars, probably in bars, when I was like 16, 17. I was allowed to play in them in New York as long as I didn't drink. And I don't remember much in school playing, doing music. I was not in any choirs. I was in band in junior high, and I had a cornet, and that's when I learned to read music. I don't read music as well as most people that I've played with, but that was the beginning of me understanding how to, you know, read. But I was really a self-taught by my, you know, I learned all the music that I was playing by ear. And so I played in bars, and then I...
And were you playing the guitar?
I was playing guitar. I learned how to play guitar when I was about 8 years old. I could play, you know, basic chords. My brother, who was the one I mentioned earlier, he needed somebody to play with him. So
yeah.
I jumped right in. And I learned a lot from playing with him. And but I also was learning and leaning towards music that interested me. And I had a lot of music in the house. My sister listened to R&B. My brothers listened to old-time rock and roll. My brother, who I played music with, was more into blues and the British kind of invasion music and stuff like that. So rock and roll. And so I started listening to music that I liked. And the first 45 that I went out and bought was the Mamas and the Papas, California Dreamin'. And there was something really moody about this song, and I love the harmonies and the melody. And that was the beginning of me really wanting to sing music like that and also and write music like that. But I still hadn't really been, I hadn't been writing yet. I was still learning how to play guitar and sing at that age. I also had a neighbor that I used to go over to their house. He was a graphic artist and she was a photographer. And they had a lot of music there, a lot of art. And I lived at that house and I was best friends with their daughter. So, they taught me how to swim, they taught me how to ride a bike, they took me to all the museums. So they really introduced me to a lot of different creative paths and things, you know. So in my house there was also music, but I came from a blue-collar working-class family, and my father was working all the time, my mother was doing a lot of laundry. So their house was very colorful, and it was like a sanctuary for me, so that had a big influence on me as well. And they knew a lot of very famous musicians and artists that would come over. So, like I said, it was all by osmosis. I just absorbed what I was around, listening to music and also visual arts.
Wow, okay. So you were playing out at an early age when you were 16.
Yeah, I moved
out.
And
you lived in New York. You were playing...
Well, I didn't live in the city.
Or you didn't live in the city,
I lived near this... Well, I lived close to the city.
Because there was a vibrant music scene going on there.
Yeah, I lived close to the city up until I was about 8 years old. And then my father moved us out to the Eastern and Long Island. Okay. And that's where I grew up.
Oh, okay.
And so there were lots of bars and stuff like that. I graduated school a year early, high school, and I saved up my money from playing out in bars. I was underage, but I was allowed to do it.
Yeah.
And then I went to Europe and I played music over there, and I was 17 when I went there. And then that was during the time when... I think Court and Spark came out with Joni Mitchell.
Right.
And I had already been listening to, Blue and Ladies of the Canyon. She had a big influence on me, writing-wise, singing-wise. I always kind of felt like she taught me how to write and sing. I would listen for hours and hours. Neil Young was a big influence.
Right.
It was also Gordon Lightfoot. Oh, my God. Neil Young, let me see. There was other people, too. There were so many influences. There was so much good music going around at the time. James Taylor, huge influence on me.
Oh.
And also Bonnie Raitt. Graham Parsons, Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
And so I went more the folk route.
Mm-hmm.
But it was bordering rock and roll. Uh-huh. I was into the Flying Burrito Brothers. And I loved the music my brother was listening to, too. That was influenced... Cream and the Blues Breakers and all that stuff. So I listen to a lot of different types of music, and to this day I have a very eclectic style of music, and I think it's because I liked a lot of different types of music.
Well, I'd like to play a couple more of your songs right now. The first one is going to be called It's Not Sad. Both of these are off of your Blue Flower album, which is such a great album. So the first one is It's Not Sad, and the second song is going to be called Blue Flower. So it's the title song of the CD.
Yes.
Okay, so let's listen to both of those right now.
It's my mind I left a long time ago. I'll never stop believing that I'm gonna find a better way. Time is slipping through all 10 fingers. Dreams are drifting out to sea. If I'd only been a New York minute, it just might get the best of me. So it's not bad that I'm leaving. I'll find a way home someday. Come on, let's go.
The hope I carry is in each breath that I
slips away through humanity's arms, like that moment in a deep, long kiss. This is about us. We all wrote this song. Maybe someday we'll trust ourselves to open our eyes. My heart, it aches, it loves, it breaks. Deep inside, love grows a fire. The hope I carry's in each breath that I take, reaching for the unreachable, toward the sun. Reaching for the unreachable, toward the sun, like a blue flower, toward the sun, like a blue flower, toward the sun, toward the sun.
Gorgeous songs. They're off the same CD called Blue Flower. Can you just comment on these songs and the making of that album? That's just, if anybody wants to buy it and listen to it, they will not be disappointed, because the music, the songwriting, your voice, so, so lovely. So just tell me about those songs and this CD.
Well, the musicians that play on that song, It's Not Sad and Blue Flower, were musicians that I played for like 20 years, live performances and in the studio. And the guitar player, Mark McCarron, who played on my first song, we played together for a long time, and he had a studio. And when I would write songs, I would go in and I would record my songs with him. I would produce them. I basically knew exactly what I wanted to do with my songs, because at a very young age I used to record with my brother when I was like 16 on TX in the house. So I, over the years, I've been, you know, recording, and I got, so I really understood how to work in the studio, and also I knew how to make, you know, have arrangements. I knew what the musician should be doing on my songs. But at the same time, I surrounded myself with amazing players, and they also had a lot of freedom, and they got what I was about. So I worked with incredible musicians, and on this, both these songs, I have Mark McCarron, the guitar player, Paul Page on bass, Russ Meisner on percussive and drums, and also Elizabeth Lee, who I met in Nashville and is a friend from Austin, Texas, and an incredible singer in her own right. She sings backup on It's Not Sad. And I recorded it in a very small studio in an apartment in Great Neck, Long Island, in Mark's studio, Spot On Studio. And then I mixed and mastered it at Dubway Studios in New York, one of my favorite places to go in and work. I always felt at home there. Amazing engineer that mixed it is Chris Montgomery, and he's off doing big stuff now in California and in Nashville. He does all the big acts. He records them, and he does a lot of live recordings and TV shows. And Al Houghton and Greg Creer, they own Dubway. And so I just have to mention them because it was just a delight. I could completely be myself. And they're musicians. They're all musicians, too. So those songs were mixed and mastered there. And then the first song, It's Not Sad, I wrote that before I was moving away from New York. I had plans to sell my house and to move to Austin, Texas. And then after Austin, Texas, I moved to Corrales, New Mexico. But everybody kept coming up to me and saying, oh, it's so sad you're moving. Oh, it's so sad you're leaving. And funny enough, I was on the phone with another musician, this girl, Caroline Doctorow. She said to me, oh, it's so sad you're leaving. And I said, no, it's not sad. In my mind, I left a long time ago. And after I said that, I thought, well, I'm going to make a song out of this. So it's basically about making a change in your life. And it's just a clear decision. And then also the song Blue Flower, I recorded in open tuning. And C, open tuning C. And it's got a real ethereal sound to it, which I love to do. And it's pretty much about the state of what's going on in the world now, then. Yeah. The things that haven't changed. Right. But wanting so badly to believe that things can get better, even when things are at their darkest moment. I do that in my songs. I kind of point things out that might not be so good, but I always try to put a message in there that we have to pick ourselves up by our bootstraps and try to see life in a better way and go forward. So that song is pretty much about that.
It's an absolutely gorgeous song. So you did a lot of recording. What was your earliest CD? When did you record that? Do you remember?
You know, it's funny. I think about it. I really should have more CDs out, and I'm working on it. I released 4 CDs in my life, but I also released an EP. My first EP I released in 1983. My brother and I, Leo, started our own record company, our own publishing, and it was basically independent. Nobody was doing it back then. And we wanted to, you know, kind of control our rights and things like that. And we had a lot of big labels very interested in us, and we got a lot of airplay. So we had a 4-song EP. It was heavy rock and roll and a very much more pop than the music I do now. But I really learned to project because it was heavy rock and roll and it was loud. And it was a great time, and I learned a lot from that. And then I released a recording of songs, a little band. I had a local band. It was just called Terry Winchell, and it was on a cassette. And we had one of the people in the band worked for RCA Recording Studios in New York, and we got in there, and I worked with some of the best engineers, and it was a freebie. So we did that.
Because I know other people who recorded or were musicians at that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it would cost you thousands and thousands of dollars to record one song at a major studio or something like that. And so it's amazing to find that people were finding ways of doing their own recordings. But you really had to know what you were doing. And obviously, because of your experience with your brother and your musical family and your early efforts at recording stuff, you found the right people, you found the right equipment, and you were able to do recordings on your own.
Yeah, I had a very I've always had a very technical brain.
Yeah.
So I understood how machines worked. I think it started when my brother taught me how to work on my car. And but I understood, I paid attention, and like I said before, it's like some sort of unconscious assimilation. I would pay attention and it would just stick.
Yeah.
And you know, when I went into the RCA recording studios, I think it ended up being BMG or something, or it's changed its name.
Uh-huh.
The bass player in my band at the time was an engineer there. And there were all these other engineers there. There were one of them did the Norah Jones first album. And he worked with us, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head. But, and then the other guys all had their sound. So we got to do that. And then after that incarnation of a band and different people playing with me, I played live for many years, just opening for major acts and headlining, and I did all that, but I didn't really have like recordings. And
uh-huh.
And back then nobody had cell phones, and right. I have very little live footage, which is sad, you know?
Yeah.
We just didn't think about it back then.
Right.
Occasionally somebody would come in with a giant, you know, camcorder.
Uh-huh.
And, but I knew how I wanted my music to sound, and I had the technical information while I was in there, so I could communicate with engineers. And we usually went in very rehearsed because we'd been playing live so much.
Yeah.
And then after that, I had a Terry Winchell band that got a lot of press and getting a lot of attention, and we were opening for John Hammond and Taj Mahal and Lenny Kravitz, and I mean it was just a whole bunch of people, and we were definitely stirring some interest. And then a recession hit. This was the late 80s.
Oh.
So we weren't playing as much, but there was still interest in me as a writer.
Uh-huh.
And a front person. So I continued, and I was singing on a lot of songwriters' demos.
Oh, uh-huh.
And their demos were sent out. You know, they'd pay me to sing on it. And then I would, they would send out their songs with my voice on it.
Right.
And that's when I heard back from a record company in Nashville. They had sent a song to be pitched to their artist. And but they liked my voice and they wanted to sign me. So that's why I went down to Nashville, and I lived there for almost 5 years. But I didn't really jump on the wagon of that record company because there were certain things about it that just didn't fit me. But I liked the songwriting community.
Uh-huh.
And while I was living there, I learned a lot about writing. And it took me to a whole other level. And I recorded an album there called Under the Veil of Wilderness. And I had some of the best session guys in Nashville play on that album. And I just, all of a sudden, my whole thing was going to another level of professionalism. And then I moved back to New York. My husband was still living in New York while I was in Nashville. It was a long-distance relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It was not easy on us. And I went back. And, you know, there's many reincarnations of me doing music, and there's so many more stories, but
uh-huh.
We only have an hour.
Right.
So, and then I ended up connecting with these fabulous musicians that are all on my album, Blue Flower.
Oh, okay.
And we played together for 17, 18, I don't know, maybe 20 years, and live, and we did lots of great shows. We did and lots of really wonderful recordings. And I still write with Mark McCarron. Long distance, we send each other files back and forth. And my last album, Blue Flower, which was released in 2016, is another independent album I released. I did get on the Americana charts. I charted again with a couple of songs.
Wow.
My Vice Versa album, When the Sun Goes Down, the first song that we played, that was in the top 10 most requested in Europe. In like the Netherlands, Belgium, and in some of the northern European countries. And that really put me on the map. Plus, I was on a compilation disc with that song on it. So I was really starting to get attention. And then I got invited to North by Northeast in Canada to perform. It's like their South by Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
I played at South by Southwest quite a few times over the years, and all the other different Folk Alliance and Go Girls and things like that. I was pretty busy still, either with my band, or as a duo with the bass player from the band of the more recent New York guys, Paul Page, who plays with a lot of people. He played with me on quite a few duo shows. And then when I released Blue Flower, I was in the midst of selling my house and moving to Austin.
Oh, okay.
So I hope, you know, this is easy to follow. I'm kind of jamming in some things.
Well, your career has been so long and varied.
I'm leaving more than half the highlights
that we're never even going to get to. I know.
Right. I know. And you know what? Now I'm here. This is what's more important, actually. Yeah. I had a great musical career. Well, I really did.
Was there a single event or performance that you look back on now and go, wow, that was like the best ever? That was the pinnacle.
I had so many good ones. I have to say they were really nice. I think the height of my career was really in my 30s.
Uh-huh.
But I do remember one night when I opened for Hot Tuna. And and I wasn't even with my band. I was just doing a solo. I opened for Cheap Trick as a soloist too. And that was a great night. And but the Hot Tuna guys, they had a big following. You know, they were Tuna fans. They were really hardcore.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that really made me feel fabulous was the audience wouldn't let me off the stage.
Oh, my gosh.
So I had to keep playing my songs. Uh-huh. And then finally let me go. So Hot Tuna went on a little late. But when I went backstage and I was, like, totally high from the positive uh-huh. energy of the audience, the guys, you know, I guess it was the bass player, I forget his name, Cassidy and Yorma, they were smiling. They were happy for me.
Oh,
and
gosh.
And I warmed up the audience good. You know, they had a great night too, I'm sure. So that was a highlight. And, you know, I opened for Laura Nero. I opened for Doc Watson. Uh-huh. I opened for, you know, I think I mentioned John Hammond. John Hammond, you know, he told me... he said that if you keep at this, and I don't remember exactly when this happened, but this was when I was younger. He said to me, "Never forget to enjoy what you're doing and have fun." And I never did forget that. You know, he was definitely somebody who'd been down the pike, and he had a lot of big success when he was like 65.
Wow.
You know, so
I know we're all still hoping.
Anyway, so I had a good career, and. Now, this past year, I was thinking about playing, and I'd been recording, and I'd been writing, but I wasn't really playing out much. Actually, I played out when you invited me to play.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On a couple of gigs,
right.
And that was great, because, you know, I was kind of doing my art and stuff.
Right, right.
And I was wondering if I really wanted to play out as much as I used to. I received an email from a bass player, Jay Lutweiler. He contacted me. We got together. He was signed when he was really young to a big record company. He was in a very popular band in New Mexico called Dem Bones.
Uh-huh.
And then he took a hiatus and he got a real job. And then he's semi-retired. Now he wants to do music again. He's really talented. And he's a great bass player. He's a beautiful voice. And he's an amazing artist. Then 2 days after he and I get together, I get a call from a guy by the name of Jim Goodkind, and he was playing with somebody that played with you.
Uh-huh.
The keyboard player, Don Novak.
Don Novak, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So anyway, he told this Jim guy about me, because they were looking for someone to play in their band. So we got to talking, and I was going to do some backup, but I ended up he wanted to play with me because I was doing original material.
Uh-huh.
And we got together, and all three of us just get along fabulously. Jim Goodkind played professionally for many years and was in a band with Rick Ocasek and Ben Orr from The Cars.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he had a pretty interesting history of playing music also. So that's who I'm playing with now.
And what are y'all called? Do you have
We call ourselves Terry Winchell and the Fine Line.
Okay.
We were going to call ourselves Terry Winchell Band, which I've always done, but I thought it'd be nice to do something different. We do some covers, but more obscure, but mm-hmm. mostly originals. And also, I've written new songs, and we're planning on going to the studio to record my new songs with them, because we have a whole different sound than what I was doing before.
Yeah.
So, and we've been playing out, we've been together for 10 months. We've been playing out since May or April, I can't remember. And we've got some gigs coming up. We're the new kid on the block, so we're kind of, you know, starting over. But at the same time, the response we're getting is kind of propelling us towards what I'm hoping will be more concert type settings where people pay to come and hear the music.
Right.
But in the meantime, we're just gathering a following.
And momentum,
Yeah, and we're having a great time. We get along great, we laugh, we have fun, and we're older now. It's a different mindset. You know, it's kind of like we're kind of doing it just because we need to do it.
Yeah. I understand that. Yeah, totally.
We need to do it, and also we're just seeing where it goes, you know?
So I'm going to ask more questions about your upcoming gigs and that sort of stuff, but I want to play just one more song of yours, at least right now. It's called Life is for Living, and that's off of your Vice Versa album?
Yeah, that's off my Vice Versa album, and that's another acoustic song that I co-wrote with Mark McCarron.
Oh, okay.
And now I don't have any recordings of the current band I'm in, the trio, but soon we will. And may I add, this is Suzanne Muller on cello.
Okay, great. So this is Life is for Living, Terry Winchell, from her album Vice Versa.
Somewhere down the road, I've learned a thing or two. Being in the moment is the best I can do. Pour the sand from the hourglass into the sea. Let the timeless waves wash over. On a path less traveled, I'll find my way home. There'll be happiness and sorrow, but I won't be alone. I'll take my chances along the river's edge where the water flows up to the next bend. That's where I shall not keep track of time. No hands on a clock or calendar on the wall. I shall not keep track of time. No one to blame. shall not keep track of time. No hands on a clock or calendar on the wall. I shall not keep track of time.
So Terry, another beautiful song. I know we don't have enough time to talk about as many things as I want to talk about, but I do want to know what your upcoming gigs are going to be so that people can find you in the community. I know, because I know you've said you have some upcoming gigs.
Yeah, I have.
Terry Winchell and The Fine Line. I want to make sure to repeat that.
We're playing at September 3rd, Hanselman Pottery in Corrales.
Hanselman Pottery?
Hanselman Pottery.
Okay, in Corrales.
It's the first Sunday of September from 11:30 to 2:30. September 22nd, 6 to 9, Ancora Cafe. It's Coffee with a Mission. It's in Albuquerque on Quincy Street. They help transition people that have been incarcerated and have addiction into society. It's a wonderful organization, and they have a fabulous cafe with two stages there. They're really into supporting the arts. September 25th, I play at Flying Star at Paseo. Monday, 5:30 to 7:30. This is our second gig there. The last time we played there, the place was packed. It was a wonderful show. September 29th, I play Bike and Coffee, Old Town Farm, from 9:30 to 11:30. That's September 29th, and we've been playing there quite a bit. It's a beautiful place. If you haven't been there, check it out. September 30th, Corrales Harvest Festival. I play on the main stage at 10:30. And we do a 75-minute set, and then at 1:30 we go over to the Village Marketplace across the street. It's at the Harvest Festival, and we play from 1:30 to 4 p.m. October 28th, I play at The Range in Bernalillo from 7 to 9 p.m. And then in December 10th, I play at the Lorena at the El Rey Court in Santa Fe. From 7 to 9. So, and we're booking gigs all the time. My website is www.terrywinchell.com. It has all our schedule of where we're playing and all our my music and my albums. You can order it there. You can also go to the Bandcamp, Terry Winchell, mm-hmm. and look up my music and buy it there. I'm all over the internet. You can find my music just about anywhere.
Okay, so, and I'm just going to spell your name in case people are wondering. It's TerryWinchell, and it's Terry Winchell in The Fine Line. And you can find her music online. I think if you just look up her name, you're going to be able to find her venues and her music, and that'll be fantastic. Just as a last little parting thing, Terry, I know that you are also a visual artist. And you paint, you draw, you post your drawings and paintings on Facebook, so I get to see them, and they are marvelous, and they're life, and they're realistic, and I know that you get some of your inspiration from your surroundings, from your dogs, from the donkeys next door,
right.
and the Corrales Bosque, and all of that stuff.
Yeah,
And they're amazing. So what medium do you use?
Well, I picked up painting again just before I moved to Austin. I do watercolor with ink, and then I also do acrylic. I'm really influenced by the light here and the colors. I definitely am very influenced in writing my music and my art, my visual art with nature. I'm really into being outside and animals. I love my dogs. They're in a lot of my paintings. I also edit videos and I do animations. I wear a lot of hats. I'm looking forward to building my collection of art and getting it in galleries and selling it. That's what I'm working on right now. And also, I'm very interested in playing house concerts and festivals, any kind of songwriter concerts.
So contact Terry if you want an amazing artist to do a house concert for. I highly recommend that. I think we're going to have to wind it up. I'm sorry, there's just like so much more territory to cover. But with Terry, who's had an amazing career for a long time and just writes and plays amazing music, and her voice is like from heaven. So it's such a pleasure to know you as a person, to be friends with you.
I feel the same way.
And
you're a dynamite.
And to listen to her music just fills my heart with joy.
Thank you.
So she has a way of imparting that in her music. So we're going to let you go now. This is Anna Rudolph with KUPR. And you can get our music live streaming at kupr.org, or you can find us on the local radio dial at KUPR FM, low power, 99.9. So we're going to sign off, and if we have any time left, we're going to play more of Terry Winchell's music. So look for Terry. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So we do have time left for one more of Terry's songs. But before I play it, I wanted to thank her again for doing this interview, in which I hope you've gathered some insight into her life, her music, and her songwriting. And I wanted to reiterate her website, which is terrywinchell.com. And her band is Terry Winchell and the Fine Lion. So please check out her website for upcoming shows. You can also find her on a great site for artists called Bandcamp, where you can listen to her music and purchase it. And one thing I forgot to tell Terry was how much I appreciate her arrangements. Her music isn't rushed or hurried, but it just flows naturally. So sometimes you'll go into a studio and a producer will want you to have a time limit for a song, which changes the whole nature of the song. But Terry's songs, because she produces her own music, flow at this beautifully soothing pace, like a boat on a lazy river, and only reach their final destination when they are meant to. So I'll play for you Terry's last song now. It's called As Far As You Can Tell. It's from her Vice Versa CD. Please try to catch her at one of her many upcoming performances, like the Corrales Harvest Festival. Buy a CD, add a few bucks to her tip jar, and say hello. And now for her song, As Far As You Can Tell. Here is Miss Terry Winchell.
Another day of work, and it's time to head home. Walk to your car, feeling so alone. You've been working more hours, trying not to dwell on the fact that he's leaving, as far as you can tell. Oh, neon sign hums Loveless Cafe. Pitch black night by the old motel. Oh, how'd you end up like the name on that sign? You never saw it coming, as far as you can tell. Oh, as far as you can tell. He said goodbye, as far as you can tell. His heart. Now you're sitting in your car, staring off in space, thinking about your life, should you leave this place? Oh, sitting in your car, staring off in space, just a half a mile from the Natchez Trace. Get on I-40, go to Memphis instead. Oh, you've cried a lot of tears. and wasted a lot of years. There's gotta be a better way, as far as you can tell. Oh, as far as you can tell. He said goodbye, as far as you can tell. His heart lied. Now you're sitting in your car, staring off in space, thinking about your life. Should you leave this place? Oh, sitting in your car, staring off in space, just a half a mile from the Natchez Trace. Oh, sitting in your car, staring off in space, thinking about your life. Should you leave this place? Oh, sitting in your car, staring off in space, just a half a mile from the Natchez Trace.